Welcome to the West Highland Way podcasts. I'm John Kinniston, and this is episode 16. On this week's episode, we have three main items. I was hoping to try and catch one or two people at the end of the Highland Fling race last Saturday. But to be honest, by the time we got in and then got showered and changed and away, there wasn't really time. So I'm sorry about that. But hopefully you've read online on the various blogs and on the Highland Fling website, various race reports, and got the results. So I'm sure you're all up to speed with all that happened. So well done to all those who ran the Highland Fling last week and those that were involved. So this week's podcast, basically it's got a bit of a fling feel to it as well. First of all, I asked Katrina, my wife, to read out her race report or her thoughts on running her first ever ultra race. And so she's read that out, and then I've asked her a few questions at the end as well. So that lasts about 10 minutes or so. And then Dave Waterman has read out his blog post, my favourite blog post of the week. I must admit, I've been looking for one that I could use from Dave's excellent blog. And some of them are easier to read out than others. If you've read them, you'll know what I mean. But basically, it's a great read, and Dave very kindly has read out his latest one. Dave was one of the sweepers in the Highland Fling last week. He swept the last 12 miles from Benglass to Tynedrum. So it was his thoughts on what it's like being a sweeper. And then the main part of our podcast this week is an interview that I did with Sharon on Sunday night. And it was great to be able to catch up with Sharon and get a sense of what she's been doing over the last 4 or 5 years. Been a tremendous run right from the very first ultra that she did, the Devils, when she won that race in 2008, and then all the way through to this year and the Fling just last week, and her plans for the coming year. So I'm sure you'll enjoy that interview. Sharon's got so much to share with us, and is such an inspiration to many people, the way that she runs and the way that she so obviously enjoys her ultra races. So I hope you enjoy this podcast, and we'll start with Katrina, then Dave, and then Sharon. Katrina has very kindly offered to read her race report or her thoughts about doing the Highland Fling, and then I've just got a few questions for her once she's finished her report.
I have spent the last 6 years supporting John on the West Highland Way, which I did enjoy and felt I contributed something to his successes. Out of the blue, after the 2011 Fling, John suggested I should try the Fling myself, which at the time blew my mind. I said I would think about it, but personally I thought there was no way I could achieve this or even wanted to achieve it. I'd only been running for 2 years, and the furthest I'd run was a half marathon. The day after the 2011 West Highland Way race, there was a rumour afoot that I was actually running the Fling. So thank you, John, Debs and Zilka. After running the Loch Ness Marathon, I took the bait, thinking trail running must be easier than running a road marathon. John was in his element, producing a laminated training schedule with short-term and long-term goals. I enjoyed the various monthly training runs, but hated the 35 miles in February, partly due to the two out-and-backs we did from Benglass Farm. Oh, excuse me. Thankfully, I enjoyed the final 42-mile training run, which meant I was approaching the Fling with a positive frame of mind. John promised that he would run with me and let me dictate the pace. I was really looking forward to a day out with John without the computer attached to his right hand. He still had access to texts, tweets and videos though. I had set him the challenge, a week in advance, of telling me something encouraging about our relationship at each checkpoint, as long as we were on our own. I decided to run with a normal watch. John had mentioned 12 hours, so I thought I could count down the hours as they normally flew by on the trails. I wore my road shoes because they gave my sore foot much more support than my trail shoes, which have little grip anyway. I approached the start feeling excited and looking forward to the day, knowing that it would be sore at some stage, but hoping that I could run to the end. I had the finish in my mind before I even started. I had nothing to aim for other than finishing. 12 hours was a time John had. He couldn't cope without a strategy or a goal. I loved the first 25 miles feeling relaxed and enjoying the chat and company about me. It was so sad to see Ellen fall, which did sober us up a bit. The feeling of enjoyment and time's elation evaporated as we climbed out of Rowadennan. I felt I was walking too much, but found running a bit too sore. I was worried I would run out of energy. I was finding it difficult to eat and needed a few toilet stops. I needed my own company to sort myself out and got going again into Inversnaid. I enjoyed the lochside. The pace probably slowed, but I preferred thinking about where I was placing my feet rather than pushing my aching legs. It was great chatting with John and others who joined us. Apologies if I wasn't as chatty as John. Not many people are, but I did enjoy the company and listening to conversations. I began to know the order of things John would chat about. It was like running with a celebrity. Everyone seemed to know who he was. The next dip in my attitude came as we left the lochside and made the climb to Dario's post. It became a matter of gritting my teeth and keeping up with those ahead. We had a photo taken at the post and looked out at the view. It made me feel so grateful that I was able to do the fling, that I'd taken the opportunity and appreciated the fact that John was prepared to run at my pace to accompany me. From then on, my mood changed again, and I felt I could continue to enjoy the day. My running became smoother again, and the miles and time went by. Arriving at Ben Glass was brilliant. It was amazing how cheering people buck you up. All the volunteers were so friendly and went out of their way to make it a great day for the runners. Thank you very much. I honestly felt it was much better to be running than supporting. I think it's a lot less tiring and much more interesting. Even so, I missed following the overall pattern of the race, wondering which friends had finished and how others were getting on. I felt in my own bubble, but so glad I was there. I had 12 miles to go. John had broken these down into 4 mini sections, which made it easier to focus. We passed through these smoothly. I was still running on the flats and downhills, walking hills, and now the smaller slopes. I was amazed at how I tackled the forest above Crane Larrach. I was able to still run downhills without it being too big a problem. Running those hours was worth the emotion and satisfaction I felt at hearing the piper. It was John who shed the tears, but I was able to hold it in. It was with a tremendous rush of achievement that I ran through the crowd at the finish line. I had no time to crumble because I had to find a place to control the nausea I had been experiencing on and off throughout the day. I need to wean myself off the need to throw up after a race. So, the lessons learnt. First of all, having a positive attitude, enjoy the day, and I was so thankful to be able to do this race. It was a privilege to be part of such an event. Number two, looking forward to the finish. It spurred me on because I wanted to get there. Number three, don't focus on the sore parts. Try your best to ignore them. Number four, I need to have a liquid diet to try to combat nausea. The Marmite sandwiches and the pancakes just wouldn't go down. I'm now an ultra marathon runner with ugly feet and black toenails. And a big thanks to John. I wouldn't have done it if he hadn't have started that rumour.
Okay, thank you very much, Katrina, for reading out your report. And yeah, just got a few questions for you to finish with. You've mentioned a few things there, obviously, in the report. But as you look back, it's almost 4 or 5 days since we did it. Mm-hmm. What's your overriding emotion as you think back on the day?
I think looking back, I've forgotten all the bad things. I can only remember the good things. But what I've taken away from it is that sort of feeling of being part of an event and doing something alongside others, particularly because it's not an easy event and because you have to work so hard at it, and because of that it's such an achievement. So an achievement alongside other people is the overriding positive memory.
Mm. Excellent. And I know a number of people have asked you already, and that is, are you going to do it again? Are you going to do another ultra? Are you going to do the full race? So what are your feelings about the future as far as ultras go?
When I finished it on Saturday, it was a definite no, never again. And I thought, well, I'm going to go back to 10Ks. But since then, I'm thinking I really, really enjoy running on the trails so much more than on the roads. And so I think I would love to do more trail running. So that, I suppose, means that I'm up for another ultra. Whether I do the fling again, I'm not sure, because I tend to prefer doing new stuff rather than repeating races. So I might do the fling again, I'm not sure. But part of me would like to try something new and something different. So I'm not quite sure what that would be. But hopefully something on the trails.
Good. Thank you. So you heard it here. She's not finished and she's going to be doing some more. She didn't answer the question about the full race, though, but I'll leave that for another day.
Because that is a definite no.
Okay, here we have it. And I'm sure a lot of people will say, oh, yeah, we'll see. Anyway, final question. Anyone listening to this who maybe watched a bit of the fling, has supported others, but has never done it for themselves, what would you say to them about whether you'd recommend other people do it? And if they do, what would they have to do to be able to finish it?
Well, I would recommend the race, because if I could do it, anybody could do it. But I think the reason I was able to do it in the time I did it was because I had your help, John, with the training pattern. I don't think I would have had a clue how to go about it if I was on my own. So I think talking to somebody who maybe has done the fling or done ultras before, asking advice, reading blogs, and getting a good training schedule, I think is essential. Without that, I don't think I would have been able to have run the fling. Answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you very much, and thanks for sharing your journey with us. And I know personally it was a great privilege for me to run alongside you and to see how hard you worked and how much enjoyment you got out of it, even though it was hard at times. So well done, and we look forward to following your progress in future ultras.
Thank you very much. Been drinking far too much.
This is my blog post entitled Waltzing on the Way from my blog Subversive Running. Waltzing on the Way. Among the military fraternity, there are individuals commonly known as Waltz. The term is a shortening of the name Walter Mitty, the fantasizing fictional character created by James Thurber, and refers to people, usually men, who create a military pass for themselves involving deeds of derring do. The basis for these individual histories can often be found in the scripts of our favourite war films or in one of Andy McNab's literary efforts. I know of one particularly sad fella that tells of red hot round casings falling down his collar from the chopper above that was firing on the approaching Taliban. Yeah, mate, we've seen Black Hawk Down too. I don't recall a bit in the film involving a bed in Stormont, and if there were one, I don't suppose it would loosen the knicker elastic down a pub so effectively. The term Walter Mitty, and by association I guess, the British monosyllabic shortening Walt, has now entered the American Heritage Dictionary and is described as an ordinary, often ineffectual person who indulges in fantastic daydreams of personal triumphs. I now shamefully have to tell you that this past weekend I indulged in a bit of walting of my own. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't bigging up my own army career and winning a military medal for doing battle with a well-armed and determined enemy, although there was that time we had a bit of a dust-up with the neighbouring regiment down in Affy. Nope, I was a participant in the Hocker Highland Fling, a 53-mile trail race along the southernmost section of the West Island Way. The key word here, dear reader or listener, is participant. You see, I had flirted with the idea of my participant status involving standing on the start line alongside some of the great and good of the ultra running community. But in a rare attack of common sense, I decided my lack of training might better prepare me for a support role, a bedding storeman, if you will. An invitation for a sweeper runner was made public, and yours truly leapt on the opportunity like a tramp on a biscuit. If you're not familiar with this particular role, it involves setting off behind the back marker in a race and moving at a speed that will ideally result in crossing the finishing line at a cut-off with the back marker just ahead. Often it involves cajoling and bullying said back marker into making some attempt to make forward progress. Depending upon the individual concerned, this cajoling and bullying might take a variety of routes. For instance, if that person is a lazy lard bucket and general oxygen thief, or a particularly unattractive woman, it might be done thus. Come on, fatso, move yourself. There's a pub near the finish line with a pint on the bar with my name on it. If you actually get to the end without me doing the world a favour and leaving you here in a shallow grave, I'll buy you a calorie-free slimline tonic. If, however, that person is tall, heavily muscled, and liable to kick your ass at any given moment, or for that matter, a very attractive woman, it's more likely to be like this. Well done! You're doing fantastically well. We're nearly there, and there's a pub where I'll buy you beer for the rest of the evening and send you a friend request on Facebook. Anyway, the beauty of the invitation to sweep the Highland Fling is that I was to take over from another sweeper at Ben Glass Farm. For those of you with limited familiarity of that particularly part of a faraway land where men wear skirts and women have a hierarchical system based on the number of their remaining teeth, Ben Glass Farm is only 13 or so miles from the end. Result! Another result was that I was to be joined in my role by a fella called David Ross. Now, David is tall, heavily muscled, and liable to kick my ass at any given moment. You won't be surprised to learn then that our friendship began with me buying beer and sending a friend request on Facebook. David is running a 95-mile West Island Way race in June, and this was to be a dabble on the route for him. Anyway, after seeing my fellow blogger, runner and Irish pal, Richard Cronin, through at Ben Glass Farm, David and I prepared to undertake our roles as sweeper runners. This involved David performing his own version of Man vs. Food in the pub, where he chowed down on enough burger and chips to sustain a third world nation through a particularly long famine. Then we were off. Now, when I say we were off, it kind of paints this picture of two well-honed athletes leaving at the sound of a starter pistol. Think more two fellas who probably shouldn't be allowed to own running shoes, shambling along, following another fella, the back marker, who definitely shouldn't be allowed to own running shoes. And this is where the waltzing came in. The poor fella, feet in bits, exhausted having travelled 40 odd miles, honestly believed that David and I had swept from the start of the race and were so supremely athletic that it appeared we had just started. Now, who was I to shatter that illusion? If he had stopped wittering on about all the races he'd done in the past, now maybe he was the walk, two things might have happened. One, he might have been able to put all that energy into moving forward more quickly thereby not keeping David and I out into the hours of darkness. 2. I might have got a word in and told him a story about being in Afghanistan and red hot shell casings falling down my collar. Laters.
Well, it's a real privilege to have Sharon with us this afternoon. And Sharon, as you know, has done some great races over the past few years, and I'm really looking forward to finding out a little bit more about them. Particularly last Saturday in the Fling, Sharon had a brilliant time, which we'll get onto. So it's great to have you with us, Sharon. And maybe we could just start by, if you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how you got into ultra running.
Well, hello there. My name is Sharon Law, as most of you listening will probably know. Also quite commonly known as the Gibbon Midget, thanks to Mrs. Martin Gonsani. And it's probably due to Debbie, or definitely is due to Debbie, that I actually get into ultra running. Remember, a good few years ago, must have been 2007, I was at a Reading reception, that she announced that she was doing the West Highland Way, her and Marco, and with a beer support. And I just thought, oh, you're crazy, but yeah, you know, I'm up for support. And from that year in 2008, I started going along to some of the training runs, as you would probably remember, John.
Yes.
And was introduced to a different type of running, a different type of world than 10Ks and marathon running, as I'd been doing for, I think, only about 3 years previously. I'd only been running for about 3 years. Mm. And it was just, I just absolutely loved it. Mm. I loved the company, I loved the terrain, the scenery, and found it was actually quite good over that distance.
Yeah. I do remember very well one of the first training runs we did. I remember you and Debs had set off a little bit earlier, and we caught up with you. And those days I was running a bit quicker than Debs, not anymore, but and we went past, and I remember you stayed with us, and I remember Debs shouting, Sharon, you with me? So you went back, but I think most of us who met you that time had a feeling that you'd be back. But can you just tell us a little bit about that first race? Because Debs told us in the previous podcast that it wasn't easy going over the Laddick Moor, and I'll let you put it in your own words.
It was the hardest ultra I've ever done, to be perfectly honest with you. I wasn't prepared. I had no experience, really, of what support would be like for the West Highland Way, and being a bit naive when we looked at you. I know that you'd done your time, and it was like 24 hours, and I wasn't prepared for the weather, for the changing weather, even though you think you are. I wasn't, and it was so tough. It was so tough seeing someone in so much pain and been out for so long. And when we get into Kenilworth Cleven, I was doing like the last section with her, and the weather had just turned so bad. And I kid you not when I say she wasn't even walking at probably 1 mile an hour. It was our hips had, our knees had locked, so we're trying to move her from the hips, and you're trying to encourage, but meanwhile inside you're so tired, and you're so cold, and trying to keep her spirits up. It was just, it was so, so tough. And seeing somebody who you care about so much in that amount of pain and pushed to that mental limit was really, really hard.
And wasn't there a famous quote that you said at the end of that?
It was actually at the presentation.
Was it?
Please don't ever let me do this. Please, please don't ever let me do this.
Yeah.
So that was that was 2008 that I said that.
And then that summer then you did the Devil, your first race was the Devils just a few weeks later.
Yeah, while I was doing the training, I decided that, you know what, I'm going to try the Devils. I really so much enjoyed the training runs, and I went in for the Devils, and it was probably the most nerve-wracking thing that I'd ever done. And like most of the training runs, I just loved it. Mm. And I got first lady in my first ultra, and it was just, it was the most surreal experience just to, you know, take people. There was Aileen Scott, and I remember she'd been at the training runs, and you know, to me she was like superb. And then overtook her, and it was Gail Murdoch was there as well, and I took her, and I just kept going. I thought, God, you know, I really, really enjoyed it, and to win it was just, it was a very surreal experience.
Yeah. So that was a great start, and obviously you just got the bug and just you didn't look back. And then the following year, 2009, you ran the Fling and the full West Highland Way race. So just tell us a little bit about how they went.
The Fling, the first thing was probably the most enjoyable but the hardest Fling that I'd ever done. I started off too fast, as most people probably tend to do when you're getting caught up with the race, and my quads were, I'd probably say I was in agony from Bamaha onwards, but my head was in the right place. So I was so focused in getting there, and I just had such a, it was just such a surreal experience. And I remember going up to Connick Hill, and Murdo was there. And I didn't know Murdo really at that time. He didn't know I was. And he's like, oh, good for you, fourth lady. And I was like, I went third at least. And I remember Sneed, I passed Helen Johnston. And I got the third. And again, it just backed up. The Devils wasn't a fluke. It wasn't a one-off. And I knew how strong that I was for this type of running. Yeah. Not only physically, but mentally. Because physically, it was tougher than the Devils.
Yeah. I think that race, I think we yo-yoed a few times, didn't we? And then I remember you went past me about 2 or 3 miles outside of Benglass, and that was the last I saw you. And you were smooth then. You seemed to be, you know, really going on and pushed on. And I think I was about 8 or 9 minutes after you at that point.
I'm quite glad you reminded me of that lovely moment.
Well, there was a slight change in the next race. So let's come to your first West Highland Way race. You'd vowed the year before that you'd never do the full distance, but that's soon went out the window. And you prepared well, good Fling, and then you came to your first ever West Highland Way race. I know you've done a few now, but can you think back what it was like that first, on the start line, 1 o'clock in the morning? Just what were you feeling, and how did the race go?
I actually remember feeling surprisingly calm. I don't know whether it was the fact that I'm out here for such a long time, you know, that I didn't, there was at no point, which I think is one of the bits of advice that I could give to people, is don't ever think of Fort William. You know, it was in my head, I was just, you know, you're sitting there, I was enjoying the atmosphere, I was very much looking forward to getting started. I'm quite an organised person, so I was there like at 10 o'clock to get registered. Big mistake. Too long to hang around. And I remember just wanting to get started. But at no point did I think of 90-odd miles. It just, I completely sectioned it. And the only thing I was actually thinking of was Bamaha at that moment in time. And getting to Sunrise.
Yeah.
And I thought, just get this first section, which I know you've got drumming, but I knew that when I got to Bamaha, like, the sun would be coming up and I would just take it as a different day.
Yeah, I think that day, that race, we pretty well ran together. Do you remember up until Connick? And then you went down Connick faster than me. I always take my time. And then I didn't see you for the rest of the day. And I kept hearing these reports that Sharon was 5, 10, 15 minutes ahead. And you seemed to be going well. So the race went pretty smoothly, did it?
My first best time away, I can't grumble. Yeah. And I know that Connick and going downhill, your knees are slightly older than mine, so I feel appreciate you have to take your time on that.
Thank you very much.
It's all sensible as well. And I just get into my groove, and I felt so good the whole way. And I've got to be honest, I didn't actually feel bad up until probably about King's House, about 70 miles. And that was when, probably inexperienced food-wise, you know, my tummy, I felt sick, and I wasn't taking on food because I was just, you know, my support team were giving me it, and I'm going, I'll take that on the way up the Devil's Staircase. Yeah, well, the wee birdies got it on the way up the Devil's Staircase. And I really, like most people, I couldn't really eat. and energy levels just went and as well. Never covered that distance before, so it was a bit of a struggle at that point.
Yeah.
But after 70 miles, having a bit of a struggle, I wasn't grumbling too much about it.
Yeah. And you finished your first West Highland Way under 20 hours, first lady, so... There was.
Mention the adventure show.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah, the event. Yeah, that was the year they did the adventure show. So you were on the telly as well. So that was great. But there was a little incident, wasn't it? Just a Braveheart car park, just as you were finishing.
Yes, I had some strong competition from a Mr. John Kinniston, who was passing me, and his lovely wife Katrina. Good church going people and everything tried to take me out with the car, with the Kinniston support bus. But I do remember coming down and. I was moving fairly well. I wasn't moving great, but I was moving fairly well. And you just ran past me. It's like, hi, Sharon. And I thought, I can't tell you what I thought, but I was very pleased for you. But I just couldn't believe how well you were running. And I knew there's no way my legs would catch you.
Well, don't worry. That was the only time it's happened. So that was it. That was a great, great start. And then the following year, 2010, we did quite a little bit of training together. We'd planned the same races. And I made that fundamental mistake of challenging you. We were going to do four races together. And I said, right, let's have a little competition. Who wins the most? And it was the worst thing I could have done because I didn't have a chance. But we ran the Hardmoors together. We hadn't done that one. We went down with Tim, remember, and shared the car down. And that was one of the most horrendous weather-wise races. And that wasn't easy for you, was it? Not just the running, but also your own circumstances.
Yeah. And the Hardmoors was the first time that I'd ever kind of went away with yourself. And it was somewhere new in a route that I didn't know. And the day before we went, my mum had just got diagnosed with terminal cancer. And I had to make the decision, do I go and do I not? And... Well, basically my mum made me. She didn't want to look at me moping about and, you know, this is what you work for, this is what you train for and it'll do you good to go away. So we went and I certainly wasn't myself and it was tough emotionally. But sometimes focusing on the runs is what, you know, kind of gets you through it and kind of turns a lot of negatives and try to give you a bit of a positive and a bit of a boost. But emotionally I wasn't fit for it and... The weather was just, it was probably the most horrific experience running wise that I've ever had. And to answer maybe some of the questions that were asked, am I always smiling? Yes, except on that one occasion. I've never been so broken. John had got me lost on a few occasions. So I was leading lady, then I was back to third. I worked really hard, I was leading lady, then I was back to third. And then I kind of left John and thought I'd be better on my own devices, which was worse because then I really took some detours and covered a whole lot of extra miles. Not only was the weather so bad and so cold, but I couldn't see for mist. And when you're up on those moors and you don't know where you are and you've got no trajectory at all, it was frightening after a while. Yeah. It was really frightening. And too much time with going thoughts, thinking about my mum. And I pulled out, and there wasn't that far to go. I think we only had 12 miles to go. And I remember Lee McLean, who was absolutely brilliant, saying to me, you've only got 12 miles. I couldn't have done 2 miles. That was it, I was over it. Yeah. And I didn't have the mental status at that point to get me through the physical barriers. I was done.
Yeah.
And I was broken.
Yeah, well, I remember that very well because I remember I said we did make a few mistakes. I did, and you followed me. But then when you left me, I thought you were away, and I got into that checkpoint at Kildale, and you weren't there. And they said, oh, no. I said, where's Sharon? And she said, oh, no, we've not seen her yet. And I was really concerned. And then you came in just as I was about ready to go, and I must admit, you looked so, so cold, and not just physically, but... really done in mentally, and it was the best decision you made to stop. Anyway, that was a tough one, and you learned from that and you got through it. But then you went on and did the West Highland Way again, but between then, I know we did the fling as well, didn't you? And you fell in the fling then, didn't you? Is that the one you fell?
No,
that's the next year. Okay.
That was the 941. Right.
That was good. Yeah.
And then our consistent fling.
Yeah, that was a good one. But then from then to the West Highland Way, the whole thing with your mum and training. So you ran the West Highland Way, but it was tough, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was actually the day before the thing. My mum had been diagnosed with cancer, the sort of 5 weeks before that, and the day before the flying, she actually went into hospital, and she never really got back out. Well, she didn't get back out after that. So to do the flying again was one of these ones that I don't want to, because it's a full day where I don't get to the hospital. But my mum, being my mum, was like, go. it gives you a focus. So to do that flying again was, and do it in such a good time, considering how I was feeling, I was really, really pleased. And then, you know, you have that period between the flying and the West Highland Way where just trying to juggle work. It was hospital. It was every night, and she was in Greenock, so it was an hour's drive from my work, and I was physically and emotionally drained. And then sadly she passed just a few weeks before the West Highland Way race. But I decided that I was still going to do it. Something to stop me from lying down and crumbling. I had to give myself a focus, and you have to keep getting up every morning, and you have to keep trying to do things that you enjoy doing. And as well, you know, it's a kind of cliche thing, but my mum would have wanted me to do it. You know, she wouldn't want me to lie down, and she would want me to keep doing it and keep enjoying the things that I've always done. So I went to the start line with the feeling of, I have no idea how I'm going to be, because I hadn't really trained properly. I was running at the hospital running around the streets of Greenock. Sorry, Thomas. I didn't know the area. I wasn't getting much mileage in. You're surviving on 6 miles, like 1 hour runs. So I hadn't really done many big ones, and was just carrying on the back of the fling. So that year, even though I was disappointed in my time, I got 20 hours, 12 minutes, which was a good bit slower than the year before, to finish it, and to finish it in a right good time as well, I couldn't grumble. And it did help, you know, keep me focused on something that was good and something that's positive, and get you over that first couple of weeks where you could just lie down.
I think everyone who knew you in that time knew that it was a really tough ask, but it's interesting. I think for some people, running is the thing which helps them through that, doesn't it? You know, and it would have been easier to have not done it, but as you say, your mum would have wanted you to, and it helped you through. So, yeah, that's good. Okay, let's move on to the end of that year. You did the Raw race as well, didn't you? How did that one go?
I went great, actually, because I'd already got. That year, because of my mum and things, I knew that I didn't have like one race that was a focus, where I'd had like the year before. As you know, you maybe do your training races. I didn't have a race that was a focus, and I thought, well, I want to do well in sums. I want to show that I've got consistency. So that was my kind of focus that year. And I'd already knew that I'd got second behind Lucy, so that's like first in any other terms. So I'd already knew that I'd got that, so I went into Raw just looking forward to the sums ball, looking forward to meeting people, no pressure. I had a great race, and obviously we'd had the bet, and the bet was out the four races. If John won, I have to write a novel or something interesting like that. We had a competition of writing a short novel. And if I won, we had to have a dance-off. And the thought of seeing you doing a dance-off was just so inspirational, to be perfectly honest. It really was. So the fact that I had such a good run, it was a lovely route. And I totally whipped you. It was just...
You did?
Yeah. Right. It was,
I don't know. What more?
Life is good. What can we say?
No, I think it was actually that if it was a draw, there was going to be a dance-off. If we had two each, that's what Deb said. And then you won 3-1, so I thought I was out of the dance-off, but Deb still wanted us to do it, so we ended up doing it as well. So, anyway, you won, and I'll never, ever do that again. Not the dance-off, but challenging you to run. So we come to 2011, so that's last year, and you've taken on a number of challenges, including the Fling and the West Highland Way, and we'll come to the others as well. But it started with the one in Perth, didn't it, the 100K? And how did that go? That was your first time you represented Scotland?
Yes, that was the first time, obviously, you put on the Scotland vest, and it was such an honour to be asked, never mind to actually be out there doing it. And it was awful. I thought in the morning I didn't... I, day before, I didn't feel very good, but I thought I was just nervous. I had a bit of a headache and, and stuff, but you know, you do feel that way, and sometimes, I don't know if you get this or you guys out there, like maybe the day before a race you get sort of phantom pains where you start to imagine that there's things wrong with you, but there's not really. And when I started running, I just knew I didn't feel right, and I felt really, really dizzy and really sick. And I pulled out, I think it was about halfway I got, I got 30 miles, and I couldn't even keep anything in me, and I couldn't eat, and I wasn't having fun out there. So I just decided that I can't do this, and to be honest, when I say I was distraught, I was distraught. It took a couple of weeks for me to give myself a shake, say, you've been through a lot worse. And nobody died, and you know, you can go on and you can prove yourself in other races. But following that, I hadn't felt well. I just wasn't getting better, and a couple of days later I went to doctors to find out I had an ear infection. So I was actually, my balance was off, and I struggled for a good few weeks to actually get back to normal. And I don't think I did, because when we did the fling afterwards, that was 3 weeks, 4 weeks afterwards, as you know, I took quite a bad tumble down Connick Hill. And you've ran me a lot, John, and I'm confident you're down Connick, and I've never really had. And
I don't think I've ever seen you fall, actually.
No, not as bad as that. And I think my balance still hadn't regained, and I still wasn't 100%. And I took myself out, so it was start of 2011, and all the prospects and what I was going to do, and I trained so well up until it. I was feeling good, and everything just went wrong. And I fell, and I ran on, and I got to Riverdene, and I thought, I can't even run. I didn't come here to complete the course. I've the two previous years I'd podium places. I wasn't come here just to get round it, and I had to focus on the West Highland Way. So I decided just stop here. Don't do any more damage, and pick yourself back up again.
I think folks listening to this will be quite interested in this, because we tend to see you at the top end of most races, but you've had some tough ones as well, haven't you? You know, and even last year with the you know, with the 100K, and then with the fling. So it wasn't a great preparation in a sense to the West Highland Way, and yet last year's West Highland Way was one of the best races, wasn't it, for you? That was a brilliant time and a great race. So let's have a more positive feel now, and just talk us through that race last year when you had such a battle with Kate.
Well, to start with, when you say it didn't go well, I've never really lacked in confidence, which might surprise some people, but I've always said, you know, I can do what I can do, and I'm feeling confident at start line. Oh, my confidence was shattered last year, Stan. And I remember, I think it was Richie Cunningham speaking to, he's asked me how I was, and I just, I have no confidence going into this, and I don't like that. But I can only do what I can do. So I knew that I'd recovered. I had a good couple of back-to-back training runs, and physically, you know, I know I'm fine. I need to get my head around it. And I did. I really did. And, you know, and I know that some people say, I never had a down moment that whole race. I had tough times where my feet were hurting, or, you know, you were tiring, or you were lacking in energy, or you were struggling physically. But mentally, I never had one downtime. And I remember getting into Kenla Cleven, and I was floating. I just felt I was in such a good groove. I was floating. Nothing was spoiling my rhythm whatsoever. And getting to Kenla Cleven, and Marco said to me, you're only 19 minutes behind Kate. Now, somebody had said good sort of 20, 30 miles beforehand, about 40 minutes behind. So to gain that time, and he said, she's broken. And I thought, right, okay, team, let's go. And I didn't rush it, I didn't do anything silly. I just said, you're strong, you've got loads left in you, keep going. And by the time I left that leg and I get into Lundervar, I'd made up another 12 minutes, and I was only 7 minutes behind her. And
had you seen her at all in that point?
No.
No.
And people kept, but my eyesight's rubbish. To be fair, I don't see anything but me. And then I get into Lundervar, And people say, and that's what I say, I've never felt ever, people I don't know, and it's a lovely day as well. Well, it wasn't lovely, but it's a bit of rain. But there's so many people out, so I'm like, come on, Shan, you're catching her. And it really, it really was egging me on, and it spurred me on. And my team, and it was Nikki Health, that says, you can see her, she's just up there, you're going to catch her, And I did kind of see, like, but there's walkers out, you're not sure. And then when we came down, you know, through the forest where they've cut down all those trees, I saw her.
Right.
And she was broken. And I was moving good. Mm. I was moving good for that distance. And she turned around and she saw me. Mm. The fact I'm in bright pink didn't help. You know, I'd love to see her learn my lesson, but I do like pink. And fair play to her. Oh, she hung tough because she was broken. Mm. And she really did hang tough. And I thought, I'm going to get you. And I was probably doing 7:30s all the way down, and she must have been doing roughly about the same, because I couldn't catch her.
Mm.
But I feel enjoyed trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel enjoyed trying to, and I've never felt so strong at the end of West Highland Way.
Yeah.
I felt so good and so strong coming into that, and so accomplishmentous. I don't know about you, but sometimes when you get to the end of races, you're a wee bit, as me and Dave's like to put it, a wee bit of fairies.
Yeah.
Yeah, a wee bit vacant, and I wasn't. I was still very, very much in control mentally as well as physically, and that was good.
Yeah. No, it was tremendous. And you finished in 19:11:55, which again, you took almost 50 minutes, 44 minutes off your PB, so tremendous, tremendous run. But it wasn't finished. You did the Devils as well, didn't you? More of a training run for keeping things going, weren't you? But the 24-hour race, do you want to tell us a bit about that in Llandudno?
Well, first that I heard about the 24-hour race was just as I finished the West Highland Way race, and still in all my clobber, and Adrian started turning around and says, I think you'll be my ideal 24-hour runner. And at that point, I wasn't even fazed. I was like, yeah, it'd be great. And so that was then, it was at the end of September. So again, representing Scotland, I thought, you know, I have to put some demons to bed, get this face back on, and show what you're worth, and not, you know, not a dropout, and that you actually have some substance. So I had issues after the West Highland Way race, get selected for Scotland, you had such a great run, you're on a high mentally, physically. I didn't let myself recover, and I didn't listen to my body, and I pushed and I pushed, and you're back out 4 days later, and you're banging in 10 mile runs and 20 mile runs, and I suffered for IDB, and I really, really struggled. Had a poor Devils, wasn't fit to do it, but decided that I needed to do this miles before the 24 hour. So got there, and normally most people will know before a race I'm quite chirpy and bouncy, and you know, and I can soak up the atmosphere. I was a moody Malcolm. In fact, Debbie Markle even said to me in the morning, I was so nervous. The anticipation of doing this 24-hour race was overwhelming.
Mm.
It was overwhelming doing your first 24-hour on road with 1 kilometre laps around the central reservation. Thanks, Adrian. It was overwhelming, but to know that you weren't 100% fit was daunting. But see, when you got there and you were there during the atmosphere for being, basically, it was like a roundabout, was phenomenal. And it wasn't long before I started running, relaxed, get into my stride, and basically soaked up the support from not only the Scottish camp. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank Sue Walker very much, because she was amazing. And, you know, the support from the runners that were on the field, and the teams, and you know, just the Joe public on the sidelines was absolutely wonderful. And it went great for probably the first 100 miles. And then it hurt.
Yeah. So the 100 miles, that was quite significant, because that was a record, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I didn't know that I'd actually got the record. No, I'm a bit naive sometimes. Okay. And everybody kept saying, because David said, I didn't actually know to the end that I got the record, because when we were finished at the end, there's me, Pauline and Debbie, and she's like 3 record holders. And I thought, well, I didn't get any records. I didn't break it. And she's like, you got the 100 miles. So everybody else knew but me, but I had my music in, and I thought they were just clapping me because I'd reached the 100 mile mark. You know, so I don't know if, So a bit naive, a bit stupid, I don't know, but I didn't know I'd got it. So it was, and see, to be perfectly honest, and John, you will know this, I couldn't have cared less at that moment in time. Yeah. I was absolutely broken at the end of the 24 hours. But I will say to anybody that, you know, the West Highland Way, the point-to-point, the scenery, yeah, I could understand that. I never really could get my head around how mentally I would cope with the 24-hour race and basically doing 204 laps of a 1 kilometre loop. It actually wasn't that bad. It wasn't as bad as what I thought it would be. The tarmac takes it out you a lot more, though.
Yeah,
trashed my legs.
Yeah. Well, I'll take your word for that. But again, I was saying, Katrina and myself were there, and it was amazing watching you. And I said to Debs as well, I've never seen the pair of you so broken at the end of a race. You know, it was a different type of broken somehow. You know, you seem to be not just the physical, but just the mental effort of keeping going for that long. But and the famous video that Marco took of the pair of you walking down the steps to the restaurant is priceless.
It was so, I mean, it wasn't funny at the end. Because
no, it was.
Can I just say, this is like John is the most caring man in the whole world. We were at a reunion party and John admitted that the best moment he had was seeing me so broken at the end and seeing me so human at the end of the 24-hour race as I was sick into bins and basically couldn't get up and couldn't move. But no, I was the physical and the emotional and doing so well and, you know, we picked up a bronze medal for the team.
Oh, that was great.
Everything about it, for the physical and the emotional and the achievement, it was overpowering.
Yeah. No, it was great to be there. I must admit, I was refrained. I could have taken a video of that, but I held myself back. No, but it was great and well done. And I think everyone was there to see the three of you get that bronze medal. It was a great, great achievement. So let's move on to this year. You've already done two races, the double marathon from Glasgow to Edinburgh and the Fling. So let's talk about a little bit about the double marathon first of all. You did that before, but you obviously had a PB there and you were going very well.
Yeah, I did the double marathon. It was the second ultra I'd ever done the year. So I did that in 2009. It was a wee tad short that year and I did it in 8:29, which I was absolutely stoked about at the time. And this year I started off and I kind of had a game plan, just get the first couple of miles in, nice and easy. Just get your heart rate up. It's a long way to go and it's flat, so you've got to be careful that you don't, you know, you don't get carried away when it is a canal and it's flat and you've got no points with hills where that you naturally slow down or you naturally walk. So I had a game plan to do. Basically, go between 8:15s and 8:30s, and I did my first 2 miles at 8:30s, and they were my slowest 2 miles. And the rest of it was really, really consistent. And I kind of looking at the Garmin on and off, I was kind of eight minute miling the whole way, and never really faltered at any point. And I did, and I actually really enjoyed it. I remember maybe the last checkpoint, and Murdo was coming along on his bike, and he was chatting away to me, and I was still, even though I was tired, I wasn't losing form, I wasn't losing pace. I thought I was losing pace because I was tired, but the mental aspect was there and my stride didn't shorten, and I was so solid the whole way through. And again, I got almost an hour of a PB. And I knew I was running well, and that confirmed it. And it just gave me a good confidence, and I came in like first lady, but fifth overall. And when you've got like Gareth and Marco, Thomas, and Gavin Harvey, the only people in front of you, you know, it was such a good feeling. I just felt on top of the world that day.
Yeah. No, it's clear from your training as well. You've been, you know, the IT band's sorted out now, and you're running well. So that was a great performance. And then last weekend we had the Fling. And this is your third time of finishing it, and again a superb PB. Just tell us a little bit about how that went, because you took almost an hour, over an hour?
An hour and 3 minutes.
An hour and 3 minutes off an already good time. So what went right and how did it go?
I just applied myself a bit more. No, I knew I'd been running well. Training-wise, I hadn't mixed things up. When I died TB last year, I had to resort to less running, and I did more swimming and gym work. When I've recovered, my mileage has crept back up, and probably more so. And I'm still swimming, like probably about 5 to 6 miles every week. I go to the gym 3 times a week, and I'm weekends are generally back to backs with myself and Debbie. Whether it be, you know, I probably see my 20 miles as my staple diet. And obviously you're increasing to 40 and 50-mile training runs. But not just doing that as a once and next again day, I'll be going out and throwing in another 20 miles. And just back to the old school for the first like weekend where you did the training weekend. I've been doing that a lot at weekends. I've also tried to do a wee bit more speed work. And on a Wednesday, I've been doing anywhere between 15, 20 miles, but trying to do it at marathon pace. And not just going out first thing in the morning and having a plod. And, you know, the weekends are about your mileage and back-to-back and working the strength. But I thought I'd do a decent distance midweek, but a decent distance at a decent pace. And I've actually felt that's helped me just get a wee bit quicker. It's quickened my groove. So it has. So I knew for the double marathon that I was feeling fit, but I hadn't done any hills. I hadn't really been on hills. Debbie was training for the canal race. We're doing the double marathon, and as well in the back of my mind, I do want the 24-hour race again. So I wanted to make sure that I kept up a lot of road stuff, and I didn't really know how I was going to be on the hills, and I was better than I'd ever been, to be honest with you. I feel my knees from maybe the descents. I felt, because I wasn't slacking off in any descents, and I could feel my knees felt a bit jarred and a wee bit sore. But I took the hills better than I've ever taken them. And I ran more than I've ever ran during the fling or during the West Highland race.
And I think you were saying earlier your time from Benglass was to the end was pretty special, wasn't it?
Yeah, the last couple of years that I've done it, in 2009, 2010, I've kind of hit that kind of 2.5 hour mark. And during training runs as well, it's always been that kind of 2.5 hour mark. And I get into Benglass, and I did set out, and I knew it'd be a massive PB, but I had 9 hours in my head was what I was wanting to go for. And I get into Benglass, and it's 6:33, and I thought, right, you know, head down, you need to get on with this will be about 2.5 hours, but it's doable. And to do it in 2 hours 5, I was just so pleased, because it was a section that I always found, well, it is really tough. There's a lot of climbing in it. You've got 40 miles in your legs. And I was running most of the hills, apart from when it got really steep. I would just walk the inclines. I was moving well, and to take 25 minutes off that section, which is only 12 miles, it just showed you how strong I am. And how much more I'm running.
Just give us a feel then. When you were in the forest above Crean Larrick, all those ups and downs and ups and downs, were you running most of the ups in those then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, apart from when I felt the burn, which I ran more of that section I've ever run, even in a training run, where I've maybe only been doing 20 miles or 24 miles, I couldn't believe how much of it I was actually running.
Well, I think to run 2:05, you must be, because if you walk some of those, that's going to take a few minutes off each one. So that was a brilliant performance. So well done, and we're all very proud of you. It was just a shame you only came third, because there was some international athletes who came, but you can only run who's there, can't you?
I thought I'd catch second, and I didn't. And being glass, I'd resigned myself to the fact that I was only going to get third. I didn't take away anything. I was stoked. I was over the moon, and I'm still over the moon with my performance. And I can't control what somebody else is or who else is on the start line.
Yeah.
Sorry, I can only control what I did. I am so pleased with how I performed.
Yeah, I think I was going to say, if I gave you a choice of running, coming first and running 9:30, or coming third, running 8:38, was it? That you'd take the faster time, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. Okay, so let's think about the rest of the year. You've done the double marathon, you've done the fling. What are your plans for the rest of 2012?
Well, it was to do the West Highland Way, but I've been fortunate enough, again, to be selected for the ACP, for the 100K.
What's that sample?
The Anglo-Celtic Plate, right. Celtic Plate. So that's the 22nd of July, so it's another 100K that I have to go and I have to put to bed, and I am focused on doing so. And I think I can do well in it. I think last year when I did it, I'd been looking at 9 hours. I'm definitely now looking at a sub 8:30, and think it's more than achievable. So that means, though, I can't do the West Highland Way, which is sad. But the West Highland Way will always be there, and I won't always get the opportunity to pull on a Scotland vest. And it's such an honour to run for your country.
Yeah.
It's not really. There's no debate about what I was going to do. So I have that in July, so now I've actually decided not to do any races between now and then. I'm just concentrating just doing what I have been doing and what has clearly worked. Doing my weekends, doing my progressive mileage and the back-to-backs, as well as the continued speed work, which I think is essential for the 100K. Also doing lap work then to get, because it's motivational. This time it's a 2 mile loop, so but still laps. And it's still 31 laps compared to running through some beautiful scenery and varied terrain. So I'm going to make sure that I get myself physically and mentally ready for the course in South Wales.
Well, we wish you well for that, and we'll be following your progress. I'd love to come down and watch, but it's just a week before the Lakeland, so I don't think we'll be able to make this one. But we'll certainly be following your progress and hope that goes well. Thanks so much for sharing some of the races there. It's really interesting just to see the ups and downs, in a sense, of ultra running. It doesn't always go to plan, does it? But I would say you've had more ups than downs, which is really encouraging. Could you tell us just a little bit about your experience then? You've been running ultras for the last 4 years now. What are the big lessons that you feel you've learned for yourself and maybe you could pass on to your loads of fans that would love to hear?
Preparation. Make sure you know routes. If it's a route that you don't know, my biggest thing for the Hardmoors was I was so naive to get into a run that needed to be navigated, and I do not know how to navigate. So if you're going to do routes that require that amount of navigation, go prepared and do map reading. If not, run faster and get selected to do 100 Ks in 24 hours around a lap. I can't go wrong that way. So that's one of the first things as well. Let's see, your food and your hydration. And I think that's only something that you do learn from experience, what works for you, what doesn't work for you. And another thing as well is your support, you know. Having good support is just, it's paramount.
Yeah.
And it can really make or break you.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that I've really learned during the race is if you have a dip, it doesn't necessarily going to last all the way to the end. You know, you have to get your head around it. If you're struggling, if you're feeling tired, if you're going through a low point, it doesn't necessarily, it's not going to always last. So sometimes you just have to accept it's just a bad point, it's just a dip, and dig deep, and it will ease, and then it will get better. And just knowing that will happen sometimes helps.
Yeah. It's interesting, earlier you were saying about you know, the race that you dropped out of the fling when you'd fallen, that you weren't there just to complete it. Do you feel sort of your mental attitude towards a race is maybe different to someone who is just there to finish it, and that's their obviously a massive achievement? Do you feel it is different for you setting off thinking, right, I want to win this, or I want to be in the top three? Do you think it's a different attitude or is it similar?
No, I think it is different. I think if I was to sit here and say, oh, I just want to get out and complete it, enjoy it, I think it'd be a complete lie.
Right.
that was how I started off. I didn't expect to do my first ultra and win it, and then the first West Highland Way. And you do, it's not so much winning it or where you're placed. It's about doing what the standard that you want to achieve. And I know yourself, John, you've had some tough times in the West Highland Way, and I completely take my hat off to you, because I think I would have said, this isn't happening for me today. And I think that shows more mental art from you than it does from me. But I think I set out for a race, like to the year my mum had passed away. I wanted to complete it. Time wasn't an option. It was just to go out and to make sure that I achieved completing the West Highland Way was my goal. But a lot of goals I go out and I set myself a time. I definitely think that when during the fling, when I knew I was going to hobble it, that wasn't what I went to do.
Yeah.
Why do it?
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think, again, it's been really interesting to watch you and see how well you've done. And we're all rooting for you in the various races that you do. Well, yesterday I put something on Facebook just to say, I was saying when I was interviewing you, and I asked anyone if they had any questions. So we've got some quick fire questions here, and then we'll get on to our final set of questions that I've been asking everybody. So these are some serious ones, and maybe some not quite so serious. So it's up to you how you react to them. But here we go. So I'll just do them in order that they came in. The first one came from George Reed, and he asked, what self-tanning agent does Sharon recommend for someone who is hairy and sweats a lot?
I would actually just like clarification from Mr. George Reed. If he is insinuating that I myself am sweaty and hairy, and what self tanning agent is natural?
Okay. The second one from Mark Caldwell, and he asks, how does she manage to float so effortlessly down the hills after 80 miles on the West Highland Way, apart from weighing less than most runners?
I would say that's more to do with mental rather than physical. Because at that point, if you're in a mental good place and your legs are tired after 80 miles, there's no dubiety about that. But when I'm chasing down Kate at 80 miles, I was floating.
Alison Beattie asks, who taught her the leg pose for footies?
It was, it's to save my modesty.
I must look at the photos more carefully, actually, what this leg pose is. Amanda Hamilton said, is she always smiling?
With the exception of Hardmoor's, yes.
Right. Rebecca Munro, what's your average running week and have you always been so fast?
Well, that's funny because I had actually read these and hadn't commented, just saving myself for tonight. I probably only average about 70, 80 miles a week, sometimes a bit more, sometimes, less. I do a lot of cross training now, so I probably do three gym sessions and swim. Usually about five times a week is what I do. But I just wouldn't consider myself as fast. I'm not what I'd call a fast runner. I'm a good runner. But I think I just don't seem to tire. I seem to get into a nice groove and I can just keep it going for such a long time. I think, which is obviously, if you look at any of my splits, you can see for most of my races, is I'm very, very consistent and I always peck away at people at 30 miles. Quite often, the fling in Inversnaid, I would pass you and stuff. And I can have the double marathon there again, it's a 30, 40 mile mark, and I seem to just, people are tiring and I'm not.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't consider myself to be fast. I consider myself to be sensible and strong.
Okay, excellent, thank you. Melanie Sinclair said, I would like to know all her secrets and how she trained to go so fast and make it look so easy, if she doesn't mind sharing, obviously.
Enjoy it. I think the biggest thing, soaking up the atmosphere first of all, being well prepared and well trained goes without saying. And don't get carried away with all those boys that have got testosterone filled and are trying to beat you at the start. Just let them go. It's much more fun pecking them off at the 30-mile mark.
Good. Well done. And then Lee McLean says, can you ask her if I can have my body back, please? She's had it long enough.
I quite like it, so I'm just going to keep it for a wee bit longer.
And then Colin Knox says, what's her marital status?
Single, nobody will have me.
Sandra McDougall, Wants to know how long you've been running and was she always a natural born runner?
Actually, obviously next weekend is the women's 10K, so it's a birthday run, and that's me. I've been running for 8 years. Started doing the women's 10K for charity 8 years ago, and rubbish. Did it with 57 minutes or something like that, and well pleased with that, and just kind of fell into it from there. But I was always really sporty. I swam competitively for years, and I swam at Scottish level as well. So, you know, you're swimming 8 times a week. So I've always been what I call very sporty, athletic, apart from my years at uni, Debbie, where we were wild. But I've always been sporty, but not, no, I didn't take up running until I was nearly 30.
Right, okay. So you wouldn't say you were a natural?
I'd probably say I'm naturally athletic, and I think my build and things, I am naturally athletic.
Great. This is not a question or comments from David Hall. He said, you do realise that she'll only answer your first question and the answer will fill your recording device. And Lee McLean also adds, she's not named the gibbering midget for now, Mrs. MC? And then a couple more serious questions. Julie Clark, why did you take up or make the step up to ultra distances? And is there anything you would have done differently so far?
Debbie made me do it. They're just supporting Debbie and going in the runs, and they were, you know, the training runs back in the day were just phenomenal, and I fell in love with that type of running. And the only thing I think I would do differently is when I started ultra running, I'd just been doing marathons for a couple of years, and I was actually just starting to get good, you know, my times, like I was knocking 20 minutes off my PB in a marathon, so I was just starting to train properly and run properly. And the only thing I'd done different was maybe applied myself a bit longer at doing that. But I feel that I could go back and do that if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Right.
I want to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. And then Ian Wallace says, how fast does she think she can complete the West Highland Way race? Sub 19, sub 18, and he also says, outstanding time last week in the fling.
Well, thank you. I was quite pleased with it.
Yeah.
Actually, for this year, I did have a target of doing the fling in 9 and the West Highland Way in 18 and a half. And obviously, taking an hour off my fling time, realistically, could I take 40 minutes off my West Highland Way time? Yeah. So I would be modest and say 18 and a half, but I actually think, know my strengths, which is being able to keep going, I think I could do it. I think I could do a right good West Highland Way time. Whether I could get sub 18, I do not know. But I never thought I'd be able to do sub 20, and I did that straight off. So yeah, it's just about continuously setting goals.
And
this year was 18 and a half is what I was going for.
It's a shame that we won't see whether you're doing up, but it'll be there next year, and we look forward to seeing if that's possible. So thank you for those who've sent those questions in. I hope you're happy with the answers. Right, and then just we got our final questions, which I've been asking most people that I've interviewed. This is just preferences. I think everyone has their own choices of things. This is what you do, maybe over the experience of the last few years. You might have changed some of them. So just some preferences. So first of all, shoes. Do you tend to use road or trail shoes?
It depends what terrain I'm on. Road for road, trail for trail.
Yeah, well, think of the West Highland Way really for this.
Oh, I'm trail.
Yeah.
Yeah, all okay. The way, in the beats.
Yeah. Sorry, these questions are more about the West Highland Way race rather than your...
You should have clarified that. I should have
clarified that. I'm sorry. Let's start again. So shoes, road or trail?
Trail.
Food. What favourite food do you have to keep you going in a tough time?
Mrs. Telly's fudge.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Good.
Debbie says it's the best thing.
Yeah.
23 years of friendship is the best thing about me.
Right.
It's introduced us to Mrs. Telly's fudge.
So who's Mrs. Tilly?
Mrs. Tilly is a famous Scottish confectionery.
All right, okay.
Homework, please, Parky.
Right. I'll try that next time. Do you run with a hydration pack or a water bottle?
Hydration pack for training runs and water bottle for races.
Yeah. I do remember one training run. Do you remember that? When your hydration pack broke and you had a wet backside for most of the run. Anyway, water or energy drink?
Water.
Salt tablets, do you use them or not?
Not unless it's really hot.
Right. Do you run with a watch, a Garmin, or do you tend to like running without any timepiece?
I run my long runs with a Garmin. During the week, I run without anything. And I run to, a lot of times I run to have a feel. Right. And maybe look at time afterwards.
Yeah. On the race itself?
Well, I run with a Garmin.
Yeah. Do you support crew for the West Highland Way? Would you have one team or two teams?
One team. Yeah, tried it with two, and the one team, they want to be there from start to finish anyway, so it works well.
Yeah, I think it's easier as well if you're running about 19 hours. It's not quite as demanding for the support team. Have you got a favourite section of the race?
Yeah, actually, from Lundervar, just not the whole way into to Braveheart, but Lundervar Forest is just, it's one of these points, and you're always tired, whether it be the Devils, whether it be the train run, whether it be the West Highland Way. There's something about the smell and the sound and the red moss, and it's just an awesome, I always feel quite elated when I reach that part, right. And I love it.
Good. Do you listen to music or podcasts or books, or do you tend to run with nothing in your ears?
I tend to run with nothing, to be perfectly honest with you.
Do you have a favourite mantra when things are getting a bit tough? Do you have anything that goes round and round in your head to get you through it?
No, sometimes I do talk to myself, and sometimes I talk to myself quite loudly and give myself a ticking off and a bit of a shake. But No, just kind of come on, head down, let's go.
Good. And what thing do you look forward to most once you've finished the West Highland Way race?
Get my photograph taken.
With your leg pose.
My leg pose, my smile. I always find once you finish a race, you think, oh, I want this, I want that. But you generally don't. I actually love just finishing and just chatting to people. And that's probably what I look forward to the most. I find that I don't actually want anything. Like, you think, oh, I want to stop, I want to lie down, I want water, I generally find I'm really buzzed. When I come in for a race, and I just love chatting to people, which was an anticlimax last week at the Flying because there was nobody there because I went so fast.
Well, that's your fault for running so fast and only six people there to see you. When Katrina and I finished, we had loads of people watching us. It was great. So finally, what would be your final tip to other people? Maybe someone doing the West Highland Way for the first time, what would be your final tip that you'd leave them with?
Don't think of Fort William, just put it in sections. And enjoy it. It doesn't matter how long it takes you to get there. You know, just enjoy being out there.
Yeah.
And when it gets tough, it doesn't always stay that tough. Just remember that.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Sharon. I hope you've enjoyed that. I've certainly enjoyed it. And I hope our listeners will as well. Because I think it's been a great story. And it's got loads of chapters to come as well. So all the best for this year and for coming years.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kinniston.
Well, that concludes the West Highland Way podcast, episode 16. I hope you've enjoyed what you've heard and been able to take from it some good thoughts and ideas and lessons that will keep you going as you run. The West Highland Way race now is just under 7 weeks away, so it's getting to the business end of the training now, and I hope everyone who is planning to run the race this year is on target with their training, is feeling good, and most of all can get to that start line as fit and as healthy as possible, ready to run the 95 miles. So it's goodbye for me, and remember, slow and steady wins the race.